All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to. I think we're going to be doing this as an edition of Altered Boy Podcast, which is kind of relieving. We haven't been able to do many recordings with the Altered Boy outlet lately. We've been trying to step up the game a little bit, so I'm really excited to have fellow journalist for thelastamericanvagabond.com, Tim on. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Glad we could get back on the Altered Boy, although it probably might be released to the other channel, but it's nice to get back in our old roots.
Yeah. I think for anyone listening, I think we will be uploading all Last American Vagabond media to the Last American Vagabond YouTube channel, if I'm not mistaken. But this will technically be an Altered Boy podcast, as far as I know. So we're not really gonna dilly dally here. We're gonna dive right into it. Tim has been researching Bitcoin quite a bit because there's a lot of people discussing it. It's a hot topic, but I feel like there is not enough critical analysis happening. Like, certainly give credit where credit is due. There are the people paving the way in the communities, and that is certainly where analysis is being done. But other than people like James Corbett of Corbett Report, and of course some others that don't just come to mind right now, they have been covering Bitcoin, but I just haven't seen as much as I feel like is necessary. Because here's the real key: is some people, there's the debate of how far Bitcoin will go, but the real key, I think, is regardless of how far it will go, if this is like the final phase or this is just another stepping stone in cryptocurrency, it is a milestone, like however way you slice this cake. So it's really important that, and we were talking before the recording, that it's really revolutionary, obviously. Like, everyone knows that about Bitcoin at this point with what it's done. And so if you don't understand it, then you're kind of falling behind the curve a little bit, so to speak. So I certainly don't feel like I know as much as I should, or would like to know. So before we dive into the analytics a little bit, Tim, I just was wondering if you could break down the history of Bitcoin. That's kind of a broad subject, but Satoshi Nakamoto, if I'm remembering how to pronounce that correctly, like, that's a very interesting concept. So I don't know. Yeah, you just feel free to kind of take it over from there and enlighten the listener a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I think it's important to understand where it came from before you kind of maybe start investing or start getting interested in it. But you're right, it is something that people need to start getting more aware of. It's not going away. It's not a fad. And whether Bitcoin is the one or there is no one. I'll get into this later, but this is not just a Bitcoin thing. This is a whole new way of finance, of money. And it's not just that, it's a whole form of decentralized organization of society. So we'll get more into that later. But Bitcoin started in two, I believe it was October 2008. So I got a little few notes here just to make sure I get all the dates right. And it was building off a few other digital currencies. But it came out with a white paper called the Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And it was a paper kind of discussing the idea of Bitcoin and getting very technical into the system of it and all. And then it was released as a open source software by in 2009 by this guy, Satoshi Nakamoto. Now, this is basically a pseudonym. This is what he used in like the forums, to when he was discussing, and no one really knows who this person is. There's been so much speculation going on. I'll actually drop a link. I'll have you drop a link in the show notes on an article that you can go all into the different theories, possibilities. People have analyzed his comments, and tried to piece those together with people in the community to try to see if there's some overlap. They've taken the white paper and looked at different phrases and tried to use Google to piece those to other people with those phrases. There have been possible connections to Silk Road, possible connections to government agencies, CIA. There's a whole list of different opinions on it, but nothing's ever been proven. You'll see that, my favorite one was this guy, just this Japanese guy, I believe he's Australian, and they had accused him of maybe being the Bitcoin person, but I don't even know if he really knew anything about Bitcoin, which is kind of funny. But actually, some people have even analyzed the name and broken down the root words of the name. What some people say is that Satoshi means clear thinking, guide, wise, or I say quick-witted, wise, and then Naka means relationship, medium, inside, and then Moto means origin or foundation. So some people break that down. Some people even think that his name means central intelligence.
What?
Yeah, so it's hard to say, to be honest, who did it. Now, some people will say that it doesn't matter. Bitcoin is going on regardless. In some ways, it doesn't matter. It's an open source software. There's people developing on it all the time, and so it's not. It doesn't matter in those regards. But the person does have a lot of Bitcoin stored up in their account, being the original person. The reason we know no one's proved this is because, as I'll go to in a second here, he hasn't moved the Genesis block, and the Genesis block is like the first block ever mined. And if you were to move that block, and we can check through the blockchain if he moved it or not, we could tell that he, because you need to have a special, you need to have your private key, which is like your password basically, to move it, and so it's never been moved, so we know that it's never that no one's proved it. So we don't know who, at this point, we don't know who started it. We could speculate, and I'll leave a link of all the different speculations that have come about. But that's something that people can explore on their own. But
Wow.
anyways, so yeah, so it started. So the technology was released in 2009. And then from there, it was kind of a slow growth for a while. It wasn't really moving too much up or down. And then it started to shoot up a little bit. Some of the things that have helped, we've had some companies come along and take some Bitcoin. Most of the time they're doing this through like a, it's like a merchant processing system. So a company acts kind of as a middleman. So like if, say, Microsoft wants to accept Bitcoins, they don't actually accept Bitcoins into their accounts where they have them on their balance sheet. They have a third middleman who accept Bitcoin. So they accept the Bitcoin, then they give, then they convert it to cash or whatever, and then they give it to Microsoft. So they're not actually accepting Bitcoins. Onto their account, they're accepting it through a merchant processor, if that makes
Right.
sense. So when you see big companies are using Bitcoin, usually that's what they're doing. Not in all cases, but a lot of the times. But it really shot up in value around, I believe it was 2013, if I am correct. I have to look at the chart again. But it shot up to actually $1,000, which was that was pretty valuable. But it's got now it's about like 550 right now. But basically, so Satoshi kind of faded into the background. We last heard from him around spring 2011, when basically he said he had moved on to other things. So you can interpret that however you want, but he's kind of faded into the background. We had two core developers kind of, there's many developers, but this guy Gavin Anderson and this other guy of the name Themos. I think that's like his name. When you go to the Bitcoin Reddit, you can see his name Themos as a moderator on there. Themos
Oh,
kind
okay.
of he kind of did like the Bitcoin.com. He kind of did like the public relations side, and Gavin Anderson was kind of like the chief scientist behind the blockchain. But so that's kind of a history of it. I mean, you can go more into detail, but that's a basic. So right now, like I said, it's trading around like 5:30 as of today. But going into what Bitcoin is, maybe a little bit more. Bitcoin, like I said, it's like an open source software. And what it is basically, I would describe it best as a way of exchanging value. And in that regard, it's a decentralized payment system that uses its own currency or medium, you could say, to trade value with. So Bitcoin is the way we measure the value, we trade it back and forth. So it's a decentralized electronic payment system that uses its own medium or currency, as in Bitcoin. Now, why it's so revolutionary is because of this technology called the blockchain. And the blockchain is basically a public ledger. It's a record-keeping system. It ver so when I transact now and I use a credit card, the bank processes my system and sends accounts over. I'm using a middleman to kind of process them with. The bank and the business are transacting together, and I'm using the bank kind of to transact. So I'm using a middleman, and then they're transacting directly. And so what this does is it allows us to transact directly with each other without the use of a bank. So I can send money directly to you, and you can send money directly back to me. And instead of a trusted third party to verify those transactions, the network does it. And it's a decentralized network. So the you know these this is what miners are for. Miners are the people who verify the transactions, and it's a decentralized network of different nodes all over that run the software. And as a reward for verifying them, they get new Bitcoin. So it's like there's more Bitcoins added to the supply. Every 10 minutes, a group of transactions called a block is verified. And basically they all, it's like guessing a lock combination. They all compete to guess the combination to the lock, and this combination has a way of verifying the transactions, and then they get the newly created bitcoins as a reward. And so they all compete, and the system's designed where it's very tough for one miner or pool to guess it multiple times in a row, because it's if one computer would take, like I've read, like years to solve the problem by itself, but with all the computers working together at once, it takes about 10 minutes. So every 10 minutes a new block is going, and they keep updating the difficulty of the math problem so that it is about every 10 minutes. And so basically it decentralizes trust, because before we have to trust a bank to interact with, as a trusted third party to mediate, to go through. Now we can transact directly. And what it also does too is it's very cheap, whereas a pro so credit cards have about a 3% processing fee, 2 to 3% processing fee. Usually businesses have to pay that 2 to 3% processing fee, whereas Bitcoin has a much like a lower than 2% processing fee, sometimes hardly anything. And that it's paid by you, but it's much, much less, and it's done by the network, and you don't require, it doesn't require any trust. I don't have to trust my bank to do it. The network does it for me. It decentralizes trust in a way. But that's kind of the gist behind it. There's more to it, but that's the main thing. And basically, there's also another thing to point out is there's a limited supply. So as opposed to banks, where they can print as much as they want, by law they can, print whatever. This one has a fixed supply. There's only going to be 21 million bitcoins in existence. And basically, how this works is they roll out the supply, but I think 2100 something is when there'll be no more new bitcoins into existence. They'll still be used for miners because you still need people to verify transactions. But you won't get newly printed bitcoins. You will, or no, I wouldn't say printed, newly created bitcoins. You would get transaction fees more. That would be more the point. But yeah, the Bitcoin network is very strong. I think it's stronger than, like, if you did like 500 supercomputers from Google or something, it still wouldn't equal the Bitcoin network. So the Bitcoin network is massively strong in computer power compared to any other network on the planet,
Wow.
which again is a very strong feature to it. And like I said, it doesn't require trust. It's cheaper. You can transact across borders. You can avoid taxes. You can avoid regulations. No one can can stop this in a way. No one can control this. No central control. So like hackers, they couldn't stop the system because the system's running on a decentralized network all over the world. There's no central point of attack. So if I attacked one mining pool, well, that's just one mining pool. There are a lot of others that all have copies of the blockchain, the software, and they're in the Bitcoin. It will just keep going on without it. And so in that regard, it's also very promising. Also, you can transact pseudo anonymously, so you don't really have a you don't have a name. You have an address, which is like 30 characters long, and while I guess you could look through the blockchain and find your particular address if you let others know your address, but you can actually do it where you can change your system. There's programs where you can change your address every transaction, so that'd be pretty damn hard to track anyone, if not impossible, to track someone if you're constantly changing your address and you don't give that address out publicly. Or maybe you give it out for one transaction, but then you change it again. And if you keep changing it, there's no way of knowing who that was. So that would be the gist of kind of what it is. But basically, oh, to go over the supply one more time. So right now, so when they started, you get 50 bitcoins per block mined. So the miners would get 50 bitcoins for every 10 minutes, there'd be 50 released. Whoever solved the math problem to verify the transactions. And I'll leave a link if anyone wants to go more into the math behind the algorithms and stuff. But then every 4 years, that supply gets halved. So after 4 years, so this happened in 2000, I want to say 2012, no, 2013, I think, the supply halved. So there's only 25 bitcoins for every new block mined. So this now and this July, there's going to be another halving to 12.5. And so it'll be very interesting how that affects the price, because last time it shot the price. I think that 1,000 peak was a lot of it due to the price halving. So it's going to be very interesting to see where the price will go to and how it will level out from that point. There's a lot of speculation going on, but yeah, it'll be very interesting to see.
I feel like you couldn't really have summarized that much better. As a big picture question, so is it fair to consider Bitcoin as like, how would you phrase this? Like a 22 million Bitcoin valued algorithm that people are trying to solve through mining the blockchain. But
Explain
like
that again.
what is the big picture of Bitcoin? How can you explain what it is in terms of computer science? Is it it's a like a program,
It's
and people are solving a blockchain algorithm? Is that what it is?
it's
Because
it
it's
it
still it I no, go ahead, go ahead.
yeah, like I said, it's an open source software, but what it is. Now, this is where we get into the split in the community about what is it going to be. You have really kind of two schools of thought here, and there's a lot of political back and forth with it. They even have two subreddits. You have Bitcoin subreddit, and you have the BTC subreddit, and these ideologies split here. You have the On what so Bitcoin's facing a problem now. They got a decent market cap, 8 billion. Although it could be much, 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 much higher. It's 8 billion is high, I guess, compared to other cryptos, but which are the next one's maybe 1 billion. But it needs to scale. The blocks, it can't verify transactions fast enough to be a very liquid payment system. So if like if 1 billion people started using it, it couldn't process transactions fast enough. There'd be a huge clog in the blockchain, okay? Because the blocks are limited to 1 megabyte block right now, and that's simply not enough to verify all the transactions. So it does get clogged at sometimes. The blocks are always full, So you have so there's that's led to a divide of how to scale it, and also that also and that breaks even more down to some philosophical and ideological aspects on what people perceive Bitcoin to be, because it's still it's so new still, so it's building it's forming what it's going to be. Now you have one part of the community which is more in favor of, I would call it, well, they want bigger block size to 2 megabytes. They want to de basically they want to develop the payment system more. Okay, they want to be able to have it more useful for day-to-day transactions. So in this regard, if we increase the block size, more transactions can be verified. You can send lots of small transactions, and their point is that if it's not a good payment system, then it's not really valuable. Then other cryptos can come in and take that market and be more valuable, and that could be the death of Bitcoin. So they're really arguing that they want it to be a faster payment system, more liquid, so as in more usable. And so really that's all stemming from that. And I totally get that aspect, because what is it if it's not, if you can't use it fast, if it's not a really good, a superior payment system to credit cards or other currencies, then is it really that valuable? So I understand it. It's more like developing Bitcoin as a currency. Okay. That would be the more of the ideological side of that one. Then you have
Because it's still a commodity right now, at least in the US, right? Like,
I would consider it more as, you could consider a commodity. I would say more like a global asset. So it's an asset
okay.
of value. It's a way of storing value. So this goes into the other side. So the other one, that's more of the BTC community. Now, if you go into the Bitcoin community, you have more of trying to develop the, developing it as a really strong store of value. So basically, as a monetary global, kind of like gold. Okay, now gold is not a super liquid currency. It's not, you can't just use it in your everyday thing. It's too bulky. It's too, it's just not liquid. It's not enough of it. And so, but it is a fit, there's a fixed supply. It holds a lot of value. Okay. And so in that regard, it is a good store of value. And so the other side is more of along the lines of, not to say they're not doing payment system too. They have a different theory. They want to create more off-chain side chains in that regard. So like the blockchain is more for big transactions, okay? Big money, because it doesn't matter how many, each transaction I think is the same. It's so whether I'm transacting 16 million or $1, they're the same in terms of space. So but
Okay.
they want to use the big blockchain for big scaling, for big transactions. So then you have these companies, you have side chains which handle the maybe the micro payments, the small payments, the dollar payments. You have other ones, you have side systems that are pegged to it. So like we can link up a picture of this hopefully, when you re-edit it. But like it's creating a two-way peg where these little side chains can loop in. The big one being the blockchain, and then you have side chains which can handle the micro payments, and the more the day-to-day things for Bitcoin. And so they're kind of more side chains, and more, think of it more of as like a settlement layer, a store of value, as opposed to a liquid currency. But if they create this, I guess their idea is if you create the side chains, then you create more of a liquid currency in that regard. Now, these will be kind of like you'll have to, the fees might go up a tad, perhaps. They're still in development. They haven't come up with all of it yet. They have like a different ideas, like Lightning Network and SegWit, to solve these problems. But so you can see there's kind of, and I understand this, you go, there's a necessary, it's Bitcoin is a very secure network. And their ideology behind it too is that if they created bigger blocks, then smaller miners are going to have a harder problem keeping up because they don't have the computing capacity to keep up. So you're going to see a centralization of mining because the blocks are bigger and it's the computer power. You need more computer power, more, you know. So you'll see a centralization of mining happen more, and that's one of the reasons they give for keeping the blockchain more, smaller, only processing so many payments, as opposed to increasing the block size, which might centralize some of the mining. Now you'll get the other side. We'll say this is just a myth. We can increase the block size, and without centralizing the mining, we can increase it for now, develop the payment system, and then start to build these side chains in a way. So some people think you can start building the you can increase the block size for right now, or for now, increase the block size to 2, but then start implementing these side chains and these other aspects to it. Because I think you're going to need both. You're going to need side chains to if you want to make it a super liquid payment system, a daily payment system. You're going to need it to be very liquid. But if you keep the Bitcoin blockchain pretty secure and decentralized, then that's very powerful against states, states that want to shut it down, central banks that want to shut it down, hackers that want to go after it. If it's decentralized, then you don't have a lot of big plan of attack. It can withstand, these pressures. So I see both sides. I'm not really taking a side. I don't want to call either side out because I haven't been involved since the beginning. I'm not a coder or a developer. I have spent a lot of time researching, and I am partially invested in Bitcoin, but not that much. But I see both sides to it, and there are points to be made, on either side, because you do want it to be a store of value. You want it to last. It could, especially when fiat is so volatile and there's so many questions about what's coming with fiat currencies and the over imprinting of them, that having a store of value is very valuable, right now. It's people, want that. But, if it's not a liquid payment system, will it have value? Will people still perceive it to have value? So there's both sides of the argument, I think. Some people might disagree, but that's how I see it at the moment.
Wow. Yeah, so much information. And it's put very concisely. I think that's a real word. I know concise is. So as far as this divide in the community of being able to or just like wondering where to go with the future of the blockchain programming, Blockstream is one of the primary companies that's kind of no pun intended. Is that correct?
Well,
The main like part of it.
Blockstream is more is the you know Blockstream is a company that has become somewhat affiliated with the core developers. They've kind of it's a company that's more proposing the side chain network, and they want to be a part of the side chain network because it will be a the side chain will be like a separate market within the within the Bitcoin community. So they'll be processing their own payments, and a fee, it's kind of like a fee chain. You do it for fees to make it more liquid in a way. But hopefully, if it's still less than credit cards and that, that could be a work as well. So that people accuse them of being for profit. They're trying to basically head, corner the market and take over a lot of the day-to-day transactions for fees, and they're a for-profit company. And I see both ways. It'd be nice to have everything on chain, but you want to secure that chain well and have it very So there's that aspect to it as well. So, you know, a lot of people will, you know, in the BTC community will call out blocks. I haven't been in it enough. I don't know them personally, so I don't want to throw them under the bus.
Right.
I think though they're gonna have to do something about it. You know, they're probably gonna have to increase the block size, to be honest, because if there's more volume, more trading volume, it's gonna have be hard for them to keep up. And so then if people are gonna if people aren't getting their transactions verified quick enough, they might look to other cryptos. So I think that they probably need to increase the block size a little bit and then start to implement these other things like, you know, side chains and different types of side chains within it. I think that both of these need to be done. I'm kind of in both camps. I think that bigger blocks need to kind of come through. So the payment system is more liquid, more usable. And then also you're going to need these side chains to develop to make it very quick and liquid.
Wow. All right. So for anybody listening, I'm sure who has maybe heard of the majority of this information for the first time, or at least this type of context of it, you know, trying to get a deeper understanding. I think we've really laid a great foundation. But for those who are still, because you know, this is even a question of mine that I still have. So I think it resonates with a lot of people. Just in the research I've done, and you know, even the other conversations I've had about Bitcoin, I have hope for it. But just playing devil's advocate, is there a possibility of, you know, it's a decentralized network, and very much in the way that the internet itself is set up, where you have, you know, it's just being constantly mirrored all over the place, and you couldn't take down the whole thing. It's almost basically impossible at this point because it's so decentralized, as you're saying. So is there a way, is this like, since Bitcoin has roots in postmodern anarchism, you know, the philosophy, is this like an anarchistic dream come true, if you will, or is this more of whether or not it was set up by a Big Brother surveillance state, is this something that could be infiltrated and just used as kind of a next step in centralized banking systems? And maybe not even just for Bitcoin, but cryptocurrency in general, you know?
Right.
Go ahead.
You know, it's all about how it's used. Similar to today, you know, look, we could go to, we have the tools to go to better systems, but it's about using them, people, you know, taking them on. So like, you know, if more people want change, cryptocurrency is a perfect way to change the money system. But people have to get involved. They have to follow this stuff. You know, how many people are following this stuff? How many people are really, you know, into it? So I think if
Not
we
as
want,
much as I should be.
no, and if we, you know, people want, you know, if you want to live, you know, off the grid and that, fine. But if you want, if the world is very complex now, there's lots going on. We have very complex economies. We need money. As much as I'd love to live without money, we need money. Because barter, I have to go find someone who wants my goods, whereas opposed, and I want their goods. So if we have different, you know, say I have an orange, and you only have an apple. Well, I'm not, and I don't want an apple. I'm not going to trade with you, even if you want an orange, because I don't want what you have to offer. Money is a perfect way to exchange value, but that currency has to be honest money. It has to represent value correctly, and these currencies can be a way to represent value much better without central control. But it's all about how it's being used. Unfortunately enough, a lot of people don't know about Bitcoin and aren't aware, and so they're not going to be invested early. They're not going to be into it early, and they're going to be behind the times. And so there, you know, there'll be people who will invest you know, you'll be too late. Not too late, but you won't. Value will still transfer according similar to how it is now, if that makes sense. People who have valuable assets in today's system, you know, will still, if they get in to some of these and they do become valuable, they'll transfer value over. So in that regard, you know, It's not, I wouldn't say there's no dream, anarchists just want freedom to transact however they like. And this is a way where you can transact anonymously, securely, and there's no central control. So in that regard, it's very, very useful. But more people have to use it. All right. More people have to get on these things. Maybe we need to cre we can create new blockchains with new currencies that operate within our systems, you know? I really believe that the change is about creating new economic systems that represent value correctly. So if we get lots of people in these systems and they're trading Bitcoin, it could be a way to get rid of, to hedge against fiat currencies. But I wouldn't say there's no dream, there's no, it takes lots of work, We have this,
Hell yeah.
we already know ways to change the system, but people don't want to put in the work to do them. So in that regard, it takes a lot of work. People gotta get learn about these things, get more up to speed. They're happening very quickly. And so, value, lots if smart investors, if it goes up with more value and bigger money carts coming in, well, they're the ones that are gonna own the Bitcoins. It's not gonna say that they're gonna dominate, but they're gonna start off with more value, and they're gonna have more money to start out with. And if they keep their money invested right and stay on top of it, they're gonna keep having more money than people below. But it doesn't matter though. If I want to use Bitcoin in my community and within my community, I can, as long as the price stays correctly measured, I can operate it within that. You could create blockchains within your own community that are like your own payment systems that are stay within your community. So there's lots of things we can do with it. I wouldn't say there's no dream. Anarchists, in the end of the day, are a lot of times about personal responsibility. And there's a lot of personal responsibility that comes with creating currencies that represent true values, But I think what we all want is no central control. And this is a really nice way where we can have no central control. It'll be interesting to see what will happen with these things going forward, how will control will come over them, how will governments be able to interact with them. If there is side chains, how much will the fees be? How will they be controlled? So there's lots of questions here, but those questions will only manifest properly with the best answers if people get involved. And so I think people just need to keep getting involved with these things, instead of just letting the experts or this, it's not overly complicated, but you gotta spend some time doing research and participate in the forums and different things. So unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that, and so we'll see. I think a lot of people have good intentions in this community, so I'm hopeful, but it will help if more people participate and get involved.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, bringing this conversation running closer to home plate here, I wanted to ask you about, I think I'm pronouncing it right, Ethereum, right?
Ethereum.
The Ethereum. Yeah, that, I wonder what I was thinking of there. That might be something else, or just a nonsense word I made. But this is kind of like a an update, if you will. Maybe a I don't know, definitely a variation of Bitcoin and the blockchain system, and just maybe a next step in cryptocurrencies. Would this take over? Do you see this making Bitcoin obsolete, or do you see cryptocurrencies being like the next field of currency? And then you have different types of cryptocurrencies within that.
Yeah,
You know what I'm saying?
Ethereum is a fundamentally different thing than Bitcoin. Ethereum, I'm not an expert, but Ethereum allows for smart contracts to be programmed in. And basically, that's like programming contracts in that the blockchain honors. So that's the centralized network. So say I agree to pay you this on this day. When that happens, the blockchain will verify that transaction and sh shift money from my account to yours without us needing to do anything. And we can't stop it because we programmed the contract in. So it's a way of
Wow.
program contracts. And this could be really huge for the futures market. There's lots of, it's very new still. There's lots like wills. You could have wills on here. or land ownerships. It could be like the law of the internet in many ways. That requires no mediator or trust because
Okay, I
you
see.
both programmed it in, and the blockchain takes care of it. Now, there's no like do-overs or anything into these things. So there's, but it's going to change some markets, especially like futures markets. I think wills could potentially be on here where you program your will in. Okay, this person gets this and this and this. And then when it happens, these assets get dispersed out through the blockchain. And it
So
requires no,
this, go ahead.
I'll just say it requires no third-party trust to honor the contract. The contract's already honored because the blockchain takes care of it.
So this is what you're saying is this basically this like a supplementary guiding principle to blockchain cryptocurrencies?
They're called smart contracts, and
Smart
they're
contracts,
fundamentally
okay.
different. You can't be programmed onto the Bitcoin network. However, they're
Okay.
trying to build like a, I don't know if it's a side chain or some type of system that uses smart contracts through Bitcoin. But it's not on the Bitcoin system. It's kind of a side chain maybe or side program. I'm not exactly 100% sure on that, but
Very
in
interesting.
my belief, you need, I don't, I'm not a believer in Bitcoin only. You need multiple currencies because this is what you need in any type of good decentralized system. You need competition or you're going to have monopolies, and monopolies have centralized power, and centralized power is dangerous and it can be dangerous. Now, if you have a lot of investment in it, maybe, I'm not all totally anti-monopoly either. It could be good monopolies that if people don't honor the thing correctly, then they lose out and other competition comes in. So if you're doing it well, who's to say it's a bad thing necessarily? But I'm a believer in you need multiple competing forces because what this does is it hedges everyone. Okay, well, if I do too much of this, this person gets an advantage. If I do so all these, like, you have four or five, you have 10 different currencies all hedging against each other, keeping all each other in line, a kind of a balance of power. They all like pull on each other and create, like, I think of it like a fabric. They're all intertwined together and then they pull on each other to make a strong fabric. But so
Wow, great analogy.
you need different competing forces to all hedge against each other. I think gold is going to play into this. Silver, so precious metal assets are going to play into this. Commodities are going to play into this. These are resource materials that they're valuable. They have intrinsic value because we use them. These are going to play into it. The pricing of those. I think Bitcoin is going to play into this. Ethereum is going to play into this. There'll probably be one or two other. There'll probably be some other cryptos. I think a lot of cryptos will go to zero. There's a lot of them that just aren't going to be. They don't specialize in anything. They don't provide new value, and so in that way they might become obsolete. But I think even my government fiat might play into this. But if we hedge them all correctly, governments shouldn't be able to print them. We won't have a monopoly, and they won't be able to. They will not control the market. They'll only be a part of the market. The market will control itself by everyone competing against each other. Hedges the market. That is what keeps the market at bay and prices representing value correctly. So I think government fiat might even be part of it, but as long as they're hedged correctly, because governments might have to issue some type of bonds or something of that like, but that has to be hedged. Right now they're not hedged. There's nothing holding them and holding them down, and so they're losing their value. The economic value is way off from the real world value, and so
Right.
these are really hedging those, and making those, I'd say weighting them down correctly. So I think you're going to see multiple cryptos. You're going to see gold and silver. You're going to see fiat. It's like different layers of crediting in a way, but if they all pulling against each other, you could have a strong fabric. But having one dominant one like we do now with fiat currencies, that and a lot of the governments all work together and central banks all work together. We have a monopoly. So this is a new, these systems are so great because they're creating new markets that are going to pull on these other markets to price more accordingly. And same with gold and silver breaking out, getting rid of, hopefully people waking up to all the paper printing of gold and silver that's in, that's totally distorting the price of physical gold and silver.
Yeah, I feel like we've pretty much covered most of the bases here, so I'll give you an opportunity to do some closing comments. And as a final question, as a philosophical grand scheme, big picture for the listener, as you know, and anyone who checks out The Last American Vagabond would know, I very much enjoy researching and discussing metaphysics. So we were talking about this before the recording, and you and I have always been fond of this idea that the internet and computer sciences represent something a bit greater than what we have, what the definition we have for it in just the traditional social context. That, in the sense of decentralization and putting power back into the people, and self-liberating principles, basically anarchism. Like, the internet has upstarted that and fostered that in a way that likely hasn't really even been seen in history, at least the history that we know. So, what do you think cryptocurrencies represent in the big picture? You could take this, if from a metaphysical perspective, or simply from a like a social upheaval standpoint. Do you really see this as a defining social game changer, like globally? Do you think this is really a milestone defining principle for human culture and society?
I think it could be. It depends again on how people use it. It is a amazing tool, a tool we have not had for so long. It is an incredibly powerful tool that people in society now has to decentralize power. The possibilities are endless with these decentralized structures. They call them decentralized autonomous organizations. Organizations that can operate on blockchain without having to trust each other, because of the way the blockchain works, and how the way we can design these organizations where we don't need to trust each other so much, because trust is already built into the system. It's like relying on mathematics as opposed to relying on us trust in a way. So we've never had such amazing tools at our disposal, but it's how they're used. For example, here's a way it could go bad. All these private blockchains get built up, and everyone uses these private blockchains because all their maybe the banks switch over to private blockchains, and we all and it goes digital, and all the money's digital, and we all operating on that system. It's all about what's, and we all buy into that system, and no one buys into these new decentralized models, which take power away from banks and hedge against them. So it's about people waking up and getting involved in systems that they want to see manifest. And also about getting involved not just in using that currency, but in the research of it, in the development of it, in the forums. We need lots of people participating and giving ideas and getting involved. So, it can, we've never had such a powerful tool, but if we don't use that tool, we have powerful tools now. I would say this is one of the most powerful tools we've ever had at our disposal. So this is a game changer, but if we, but again, we've had game changers before that we didn't take advantage of. We have alternative media now, we have internet now, but still the game is not all the way changed. It's changing, don't get me wrong, it's changing. Never we had this amount of information and this many people woken up, and it's in many ways it's a growing thing, so it is happening. I guess it doesn't always happen as fast as we think, but we have an opportunity here now to build a new monetary system, and build one that takes in all these aspects, cryptos and, like I said, physical metals, and it could be a way to hedge the other system. Okay, well, if you don't play ball, we're going to run away with this system. Yeah, we're gonna make you obsolete. So in that way,
Wow.
it could force them to play ball in a fair, just system. I don't mind if government prints money, as long as they do it justly. And so
Right.
it's all about how we use the tool. You know, like we talk about in the past, metaphysics is both can be both used as positive and negative, black and white magic.
Totally.
And so it's all about what we do with it that's really going to define how the new monetary system is going to come about. But a new monetary system is forming, no doubt. The old system is collapsing. Fiats are dying. There is going to be some type of world system. I don't look at this as necessarily a bad thing. We've never been so communicated. We communicate so well now, cross borders, travel. So that is part of the world system, and most people enjoy that. I love that I can go travel all over the world. I can communicate with people all over the world. Hopefully, I can transact with these new currencies across borders with little to no fees. So there is a world, the world system's coming, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but it's about how power is going to be centralized or decentralized within this world system that's really going to be defining. And so I think people will need to get involved in helping create some type of decentralized system and use and getting and understanding what, is happening in this arena of money to make it decentralized. So people just need to kind of get involved in that and get knowledgeable in those areas.
Well, you heard it, folks, straight from the mouth of someone who has taken the time to do some serious research on the matter. Cryptocurrencies and not just Bitcoin are a revolutionary mechanism, a tool for people to use. And those people includes the central banking systems and the upper echelons of human society. So it's important for everyone to play their part and make sure that all aspects are accounted for. Now, so again, thank you so much, Tim. You really could not have elaborated that better. We even went deeper than I expected to go, fitting in physical, precious metals and stuff like that, among so many other things we discussed. So it's great. Now, again, ladies and gentlemen, I would invite you to check out thelastamericanvagabond.com. You can just go directly to the show notes of the video where you can see Tim's article that was put out recently on Bitcoin. Quite extensive. It covers all of the basics that you would need to know, and this video just goes a step further while still covering the basic information. So they go great, they go hand in hand, and I would even recommend you share them with people who are also looking to understand Bitcoin. And also, some wild cards, some shout outs out there, information. Anyone trying to wrap their heads around nuclear 9/11, go check out thelastamericanvagabond.com. Tim and our fellow correspondent Jay went ahead and broke that down for us. I have some articles just recently put up about some holistic herbal medicines and even how the 1960s psychedelic hippie movement was orchestrated by the CIA. So go check out thelastamericanvagabond.com where we're covering all these strange topics and geopolitics and more. And remember that we all have to play our part, and if we're not playing our part in these things like cryptocurrencies and in our culture and society in general, then, well, quite frankly, you have the situation that we're currently in as a culture and society. So I think we should learn from our mistakes. Tim, do you have any closing comments or shout outs?
No, I would just say try to get involved in this, learn. That's why I put that article out. It's a great stepping stone for anyone that doesn't know about Bitcoin. There's a lot of links in it that you can go further into. I've evolved in my understanding since the article, but the learning how it works, how the system works, and what it's a very powerful article in that regard. But yeah, check it out, and just continue to get informed more than anything. But I would. If you want to protect your, I do believe, and this is my own opinion, but it's not just mine, but other people have said this, a lot of people, the monetary system's changing, and if you want to protect your wealth and you want to protect your assets, And even if you want to make a lot of money, because there's going to be a major revaluation that's already underway, I would start to get pay attention and start to get knowledgeable, because especially if you have a family and stuff, you're going to want to protect your wealth. And it's a great time to make a lot of money if you are in the new, part of the new system. You are aware of the new paradigm that's going to happen in finance. So definitely get involved and start reading up.
Well, again, what a great conversation, Tim. It was a pleasure to talk to you this morning. Again, ladies and gentlemen, check out The Last American Vagabond. Thanks for tuning in to Altered Void Podcast. And remember that basically we're all living in a quantum holographic simulation, and it doesn't really matter which way you break it down. It really is all based on social response. It's social response. And so really, the only thing you can do is help a brother out. So that's what I suggest to you. So again, thanks, ladies and gentlemen. Have a good one.